Hello, and welcome to 50 Plus. I'm glad you'll be joining me this afternoon as we read about the unique challenges and triumphs of older adults in today's ever-evolving society. I'm Virginia Voice volunteer Paula Dessel, and today I begin with the article about why older Americans are drinking so much. The pandemic played a role in increased consumption, but alcohol use among people 65 and older was climbing even before 2020. This article is by Paula Spann from the New York Times, dated March 30th, 2024. The phone awakened Doug Nordman at 3 a.m. A surgeon was calling from a hospital in Grand Junction, Colorado, where Mr. Nordman's father had arrived at the emergency room, incoherent and in pain, and then lost consciousness. At first, the staff had thought he was suffering a heart attack, but a CT scan found that part of his small intestine had been perforated. A surgical team repaired the hole, saving his life, but the surgeon had some other questions. "Was your father an alcoholic?" he asked. The doctors had found Dean Nordman malnourished, his peritoneal cavity, quote, awash with alcohol, unquote. The younger Mr. Nordman, a military personal finance author living in Oahu, Hawaii, explained that his 77-year-old dad had long been a classic social drinker, a scotch and water with his wife before dinner, which got topped off during dinner, and then another after dinner, and perhaps a nightcap. Having 3 to 4 drinks daily exceeds current dietary guidelines, which define moderate consumption as 2 drinks a day for men and 1 for women, or less. But that was the normal drinking culture of the time, said Doug Nordman, now 63. At the time of his 2011 hospitalization, though, Dean Nordman, a retired electrical engineer, was widowed, living alone, and developing symptoms of dementia. He got lost while driving, struggled with household chores, and complained of a slipping memory. He had waved off his 2 sons' offers of help, saying he was fine. During that hospitalization, however, Doug Nordman found hardly any food in his father's apartment. Worse, reviewing his father's credit card statements, I saw recurring charges from the liquor barn and realized he was drinking a pint of scotch a day, he said. Public health officials are increasingly alarmed by older Americans drinking. The annual number of alcohol-related deaths from 2020 through 2021 exceeded 178,000, according to recently released data from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, more deaths than from all drug overdoses combined. An analysis by the National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism shows that people over 65 accounted for 38% of that total. From 1999 to 2020, the 237% increase in alcohol-related deaths among those over age 55 was higher than for any age group except 25 to 34-year-olds. Americans largely fail to recognize the hazards of alcohol, said George Kube, the director of the Institute. Alcohol is a social lubricant when used within the guidelines, but I don't think they realize that as the dose increases, it becomes a toxin, he said. And the older population is even less likely to recognize that. The growing number of older people accounts for much of the increase in deaths, Dr. Kube said. An aging population foreshadows a continuing surge that has healthcare providers and elder advocates worried, even if older people's drinking behavior doesn't change. But it has been changing. The proportions of people over 65 who report using alcohol in the past year, about 56%, and the past month, about 43%, are lower than for all other groups of adults. But older drinkers are markedly more likely to do it frequently, on 20 or more days a month, than the younger ones. Moreover, a 2018 meta-analysis found that binge drinking, defined as four or more drinks on a single occasion for women, five or more for men, had climbed nearly 40% among older Americans over the past 10 to 15 years. What's going on here? The pandemic has clearly played a role. The CDC reported that deaths attributable directly to alcohol use, emergency room visits associated with alcohol, and alcohol sales per capita all rose from 2019 to 2020 as COVID arrived and restrictions took hold. A lot of stressors impacted us. The isolation, the worries about getting sick, Dr. Koob said. They point to people drinking more to cope with that stress. Researchers also cite a cohort effect. Compared to those before and after them, the boomers are a substance-using generation, said Keith Humphreys, a psychologist and addiction researcher at Stanford. And they're not abandoning their youthful behavior, he said. Studies show a narrowing gender divide, too. Women have been the drivers of change in this age group, Dr. Humphreys said. From 1997 to 2014, drinking rose an average of 0.7% a year for men over 60, while their binge drinking remained stable. Among older women, drinking climbed by 1.6% annually, with binge drinking up 3.7%. Contrary to stereotypes, upper-middle-class, educated people have higher rates of drinking, Dr. Humphreys explained. In recent decades, as women grew more educated, they entered workplaces where drinking was normative. They also had more disposable income. The women retiring now are more likely to drink than their mothers and grandmothers, he said. Yet, alcohol use packs a greater wallop for older people, especially for women, who become intoxicated more quickly than men because they're smaller and have fewer of the gut enzymes that metabolize alcohol. Seniors may argue that they are merely drinking the way they always have, but equivalent amounts of alcohol have much more disastrous consequences for older adults whose bodies cannot process it as quickly, said Dr. David Osland, a psychiatrist at the University of Pennsylvania and the Veterans Affairs Medical Center in Philadelphia. It causes slower thinking, slower reaction time, and less cognitive capacity when you're older, he said, ticking off the risks. Long associated with liver diseases, alcohol also exacerbates cardiovascular disease, renal disease, and if you've been drinking for many years, there's an increase in certain kinds of cancer, he said. Drinking contributes to falls, a major cause of injury as people age, and also disrupts sleep. Older adults also take a lot of prescription drugs, and alcohol interacts with a long list of them. These interactions can be particularly common with pain medications and sleep aids, like benzodiazepines, sometimes causing oversedation. In other cases, alcohol can reduce a drug's effectiveness. Dr. Osland cautions that, while many prescription bottles carry labels that warn against using drugs with alcohol, patients may shrug that off, explaining that they take their pills in the morning and don't drink until evening. Those medications are in your system all day long, so when you drink, there's still that interaction, he tells them. One proposal for combating alcohol misuse among older people is to raise the federal tax on alcohol for the first time in decades. Alcohol consumption is price sensitive, and it's pretty cheap right now relative to income, Dr. Humphreys said. Resisting industry lobbying and making alcohol more expensive, the way higher taxes may have made cigarettes more expensive, could reduce use. So could eliminating barriers to treatment. Treatments for excessive alcohol use, including psychotherapy and medications, are no less effective for older patients, Dr. Osland said. In fact, age is actually the best predictor of a positive response, he said, adding that treatment does not necessarily mean you have become abstinent. We work with people to moderate their drinking. But the 2008 federal law requiring health insurers to provide parity, meaning the same coverage for mental health, including substance use disorders, as it provides for other medical conditions, doesn't apply to Medicare. Several policy and advocacy groups are working to eliminate these disparities. Dean Nordman never sought treatment for his drinking. But after his emergency surgery, his sons moved him into a nursing home where antidepressants and a lack of access to alcohol improved his mood and his social ability. He died in the facility's memory care unit in 2017. Doug, whom his father had introduced to beer at age 13, had been a heavy drinker himself, he said, to the point of blackout as a college student and a social drinker thereafter. But after watching his father's decline, I realized this was ridiculous, he recalled. Alcohol can exacerbate the progression of cognitive decline, and he had a family history. He has remained sober since that pre-dawn phone call 13 years ago. And that's the conclusion of the story from the New York Times about why older Americans are drinking so much. Our next story is from the Washington Post by Carly Stern, dated March 17, 2024. Finding a doctor who specializes in senior care is hard. Here's why. Research suggests geriatricians more effectively manage older patients' care, but several factors dampen interest in the field. Pat Early, age 66, has lived with the autoimmune disease Sjögren syndrome since her 30s. She must rely on a stable of specialists, a rheumatologist, a gastroenterologist, endocrinologist, ophthalmologist, and the like, to manage the fatigue, muscle pain, and other complications of the disease, all helmed by her long-term primary care doctor. When the doctor started cutting back his staff, she began searching for someone new and stumbled across a medical practice of geriatricians, doctors who specialize in patients over age 65. Early didn't consider herself old, so it never even crossed my mind that that was something I should be looking at, she said. But she's grateful for the switch. They said, "We want to have a personal relationship with you, and we want to stay with you until you die," Early said. They seemed deeply understanding of the aging to end-of-life issues that older people and their families confront. I feel so lucky that I know other people my age don't have that. People over 65 use more health care than other age groups and make up nearly half of hospital admissions. But there are just 7,300 board-certified geriatricians in the United States, which is fewer than 1% of all physicians, according to the American Geriatric Society. By contrast, more than 60,000 pediatricians were practicing in 2021, according to the Association of American Medical Colleges. Yet, research suggests that geriatricians more effectively and efficiently manage older patients than doctors without such training, leading to lower inpatient death rates, shorter hospital stays, and reduced patient costs. Right now, the United States has roughly one geriatrician for every 10,000 older patients. Only 41.5% of geriatric medicine fellowship positions were filled in late 2023. Down from 43% in 2022. Meanwhile, the number of people over age 65 is expected to grow by nearly 40% within the decade. The vast majority of older people are getting care from people who have little to no training in the care of older adults, said Louise Aronson, a professor of geriatric medicine at the University of California at San Francisco, and the author of Elderhood, Redefining Aging, Transforming Medicine, Reimagining Life. Mind, Mobility, Medications. This shortage stems from negative stereotypes about aging, lack of exposure to the field among doctors, and lower pay than many other medical specialties, experts say, and can lead to doctors misdiagnosing symptoms or overprescribing drugs that can cause cognitive impairment or other issues in older patients. It is dire, Aronson said. Changes in body composition as people age alter how drugs are metabolized, said Ryan Pate, a geriatric psychiatrist at Stanford University. Even at low doses, older adults may start to respond differently as they age to the drugs they have taken their whole lives. Many doctors and patients don't realize that some common medications can impair older adults' executive functioning, attention, language, and memory. For instance, digoxin, a prescription medicine used for abnormal heart rhythms, can cause appetite loss, while over-the-counter sleep aids like Benadryl and its generics can precipitate delirium and falls. Even the widely used anti-inflammatories, Advil and Aleve, can cause gastrointestinal bleeding, increase blood pressure, impair kidney function, and raise the risk of heart failure in older patients, experts said. Pate said he often sees patients experiencing confusion, hallucinations, or sleep disruption caused by medications they have been given for other conditions. Another important part of my job is sometimes as much de-prescribing or reducing medications as it is prescribing, Pate said. All physicians should have basic competence in the 5 M's, mind, mobility, medications, multi-complexity, and understanding what matters most to patients, said Roseanne M. Leipzig, a professor and vice chair emerita in the Brookdale Department of Geriatrics and Palliative Medicine at the Icahn School of Medicine at Mount Sinai in New York. Some doctors don't understand what they think is a new symptom or problem is actually an adverse effect of a drug, which in younger people wouldn't cause that, Leipzig said. When a patient has got a lot of things going on, you need someone to quarterback for you. This was especially true for Early, who needed someone to connect the dots between various conditions. When COVID-19 caused long-standing swelling in Early's legs that constrained her mobility, her new geriatric practice provider noticed that Early seemed depressed and asked her about it. Early couldn't walk down her front steps, so she felt trapped inside her house, she responded. The doctor pushed her to get a ramp installed and affectionately dubbed it the Ramp of Freedom, that Early has said transformed her day-to-day life. Medicare's part, student loan incentives. The supply-demand mismatch between geriatricians and those like Early who need them has been building for decades. Geriatrics only became a board-certified specialty in 1988, and accredited medical schools aren't required to teach geriatrics, so many don't. Pate wasn't exposed to a specific geriatrics rotation until his third year of residency in psychiatry in 2020, though he felt drawn to it and later pursued a fellowship. The Accreditation Council only requires 1 month of geriatrics in a 4-year general adult psychiatry residency program in order to graduate. If we don't have exposure to it or learn about it, then how do we know it might be a path we want to pursue? Pate asked. The shortfall is exacerbated by a dearth of primary care doctors. Family medicine doctors and internists typically form the pipeline into geriatrics, and the lower salaries the geriatricians often make relative to their peers. Although fellowship-trained geriatricians have more training than general internists, their salaries tend to be about $20,000 less on average, according to a study in the journal Nature Aging. The median starting salary for a geriatrician is about $186,000, according to the AAMC Faculty Salary Report from 2019 to 2020, compared with roughly $205,000 for general internal medicine and $2,016,000 for general family medicine. One reason for the lower salaries is that most geriatricians' patients are on Medicare, the federal health insurance program for anyone 65 or older, whereas general internists see a greater share of patients with private insurance and some with Medicare. Private insurers pay nearly double Medicare rates, according to KFF. Health insurance tends to pay doctors for how many patients they treat, but geriatricians often don't see as many as internists do, given that older patients may require more time and more out-of-office management. Experts highlight creative ways to boost financial incentives and exposure. Leipzig pointed out that since Medicare funds part of residencies and fellowships, regardless of the specialty, why doesn't Medicare require that these trainees demonstrate basic competencies in the geriatric field? Making program funding contingent on this would ensure some knowledge of geriatric issues for residents across specialties. Aronson suggested student loan forgiveness programs for doctors who specialize in geriatrics, similar to medical school loan forgiveness programs offered to doctors at qualifying nonprofit or government hospitals. Leipzig pointed to a new pilot program in the works to encourage more geriatric expertise by creating a mid-career pathway for general internists, similar to executive MBA programs. Some experienced internists will be able to pursue intensive, short-term geriatric training without sacrificing their salaries or established practices. For the growing number of older people, this brings good news. It's easy to lose your confidence when your body stops working like it used to, Early said. You already feel overlooked as an older person. If you don't have a doctor that you feel is in your corner or really sees you and cares about you, it's possible to say, well, I guess I'm just not worth it. That's the conclusion of the story from the Washington Post about why finding a doctor who specializes in senior care is so difficult. Next up, Making the Most of Skipped Generational Trips, written by Cheryl McGuire at aarp.org, dated April 5th, 2024. For grandparents traveling with grandchildren, it's a chance to bond and create shared memories. One of the travel trends to look for in 2024 is skipped generation trips. This is when grandparents travel with their grandchild without children, thereby skipping a generation. According to the 2023 U.S. Family Travel Survey, grandparents choose to take a skipped generational trip to be able to bond with their grandchild. In the survey from the American Family Travel Association, grandparents said that after taking this type of trip, they think their grandchild is more adventurous and that the trip help their grandchild be more flexible and adaptable. We spoke to travel experts to find the best tips and types of travel for your skipped generation trip. Number one, talking with your child about traveling without them. The initial conversations have to be between the grandparent and the parents, without the grandchild involved. And just make sure that parents are comfortable with it, said Kenneth Shapiro, the board president of the Family Travel Association. He explains that typically parents are excited to have their child and parent going to take a trip together. In most cases, the grandparent pays for the vacation so that their child doesn't need to worry about expenses. Also, if the grandparents take their grandchild on a trip during their school vacation or the summer, the parent doesn't need to take time off from their job. It's a win-win for everybody, says Shapiro. Grandparents can explain that this trip is an opportunity to spend time with their grandchild. I think it's a chance to just say that the grandparents want to bond in a special way, said Darley Newman, the host and executive producer of Travels with Darley. Tip number two, explaining expectations during the trip. If a grandparent doesn't live with their grandchild, they will need to set expectations with them before they travel. There are certain situations that an adult needs to be in charge. You can't just let the kids run the show all the time, says Shapiro. He explains that grandparents should ask for their grandchild's input during the planning stages. I think that's an opportunity to give the grandchild some responsibility and also a chance to have fun, he says. If you allow the grandchild to collaborate during the planning process, then they will be able to select activities or destinations based on their interests. The more that the grandchild's involved in the planning, the more special I think the trip is going to be, said Jessica Griskovaj, a senior travel advisor and the founder of Runway Travel. Tip number three. Consider activity levels, mobility needs, and downtime. Shelby Dewolski, founder and CEO of the Denver-based travel company Authentico, explains that it is important to understand the limitations at your destination related to physical activity, safety, and mobility. It really does change where you're sending people, she said. For example, if you have mobility needs, she might suggest a location that has accessibility features, such as elevators or wheelchair ramps, instead of a place with a lot of stairs or cobblestone roads. Another key factor is incorporating breaks or downtime into your trip. No matter your age, if you don't take a break, you'll be too tired to enjoy the trip. For any family travel, you have to add some downtime, Griskovaj says. Number four, consider these trips for skip-generation travel. You can take a skip-generation trip anywhere, but experts suggest these types of trips are typically set up to accommodate you. First, exploring ancestry and heritage. Heritage tourism, a type of travel that traces your roots, has become popular in recent years due to DNA services that track your lineage. I think it's a great opportunity to learn more about yourself and the world that you're in at the same time, Shapiro says. Before your heritage trip, you can research your genealogy and then meet relatives or travel to places based on your ancestry. It's not until you're actually there tasting the local food and seeing the sights that you will understand that the location is important. It can change the way you think about yourself, Newman says. Second idea, ocean or river cruises. Cruises are an all-inclusive accommodation and meal option that easily allow you to see multiple destinations. You unpack once, and you get to visit multiple countries, said Griskovaj. Cruise lines such as Royal Caribbean Cruises, Norwegian Cruise Line, and Disney Cruise also offer group activities, entertainment, and excursions. Kids or teen clubs offered on some cruises could provide a chance for the grandparents to take a break if needed. Another bonus is that grandparents can easily keep track of their grandchild on river cruises, such as AROSA Cruises, UniWorld, or AMA Waterways. It's a contained and safe environment, says Newman. Third idea, all-inclusive resorts. Similar to a cruise vacation, an all-inclusive resort, such as beaches, Club Med, or Nickelodeon resorts, offers activities and entertainment in a hotel instead of on a cruise ship. Many of these resorts also offer a kid or teen club. If you get seasick or prefer to stay in one location, this may be a better option than a cruise. Next option, ranches. A ranch trip offers a Western lifestyle experience including fishing, horseback riding, hiking, and more. Newman explains that ranches like Devil's Thumb Ranch, Gros Ventre Ranch, River Ranch, and Tankverde Ranch are a great way to get together in a secure environment, but still have an outdoor adventure that leads to bonding with one another. Next option, safaris. Safaris like Good Earth Tours, Australian Wildlife Tours, and Mikado Safaris allow you to travel to a natural animal habitat. Safaris are great because you have a guide with you the whole time, says Dawilski. The children get to see animals every day, which is an engaging, once-in-a-lifetime, memorable experience. But you have a guide with you all the time to cater to all of your needs. Final option, group tours. Group tours are a popular option for skip-generation trips arranged by a travel agent. Road Scholar is a group tour company that focuses on experiential learning. It and Intrepid Travel offer specific trips for grandparents and grandchildren that are traveling together. Rick Steves, European Family Tours, are another group tour option. We take care of all the planning and all the logistics so you don't have to think about what you need to plan ahead of time, said Kelsey Perry, Director of Public Relations for Road Scholar. And that's the conclusion of the article about skip generation travel for grandparents and their grandchildren. Our next story is entitled, Can Allergies Get Worse with Age? Some older adults might find their allergies getting worse with age. This is likely due to a decline in organ function and the development of long-term health conditions. Both of these can affect the incidence and severity of allergies. This article was written by Mary West for medicalnewstoday.com, and it's dated January 23, 2024. An allergic response occurs when a person's immune system has a hypersensitive reaction to a substance that does not usually produce this reaction in most individuals. These substances are called allergens. Older adults are susceptible to the same allergens that can affect individuals of any age. These may include food, medications, insect bites, and environmental substances such as pollen. Allergic reactions can involve the skin or the respiratory system, which includes the lung, nose, and breathing passages. This article discusses how allergies may worsen with age, including the causes, types, and treatment. Do allergies get worse with age? A 2017 review notes that there is little research into the prevalence of allergy in older adults. However, due to factors associated with aging, allergies do have the potential to worsen as people get older. Multiple factors contribute to the increased vulnerability of older adults to allergies. The authors of this review explain that aging causes anatomical changes and a decline in the functioning of multiple organs, including gut, skin, respiratory system, and immune system. People in this age group also tend to develop more chronic or long-term conditions, which may influence their response to an allergen. Common types of allergies that get worse with age. These can include the following. Food allergies. Until recently, doctors considered food allergy a condition that predominantly affects children. However, the incidence in all ages is rising worldwide, affecting even older adults, according to a 2019 review. The higher risk of food allergies in this age group stems from, first, atypical functioning of the immune system, which can result in elevated inflammation. Second, increased permeability in the intestinal tract, meaning more substances may pass from the intestines into the rest of the body. Third, negative changes in the gut microbiota, which can negatively affect the immune response and increase inflammation. And fourth, more deficiencies in antioxidants and nutrients that the immune system needs for typical functioning. The next type of allergy that can get worse with age is a drug allergy. Another 2017 review states that older adults have a higher risk of drug-related issues, most of which stem from side effects of medications rather than allergic reactions. No adequate studies have determined the prevalence of drug allergies in older adults, but it is possible to estimate that it ranges from 0.6 to 2.1%. Some of these allergies are serious, as they comprise as much as 10% of fatal drug reactions. These factors underlie drug-related issues due to side effects, not allergies. More coexisting chronic conditions, use of multiple prescription and over-the-counter medications that may interact, and memory difficulty. The next common type of allergy that may increase with age is hay fever and asthma. An older 2011 review states that the physiological and anatomical changes in the nose, such as weakening of the septum, occur due to aging. This may worsen symptoms of hay fever that occur when people experience a hypersensitive reaction to pollen or other environmental substances they are exposed to. Symptoms of hay fever may include runny nose, nasal congestion, and cough. Evidence indicates that other changes due to aging may worsen asthma. These may include a progressive decline in lung function and a weakening of breathing muscles. Asthma symptoms may include wheezing and difficulty breathing, although other age-related conditions may cause them too. The next condition that may worsen with age are skin allergies. As people age, their skin loses hydration and becomes dry. According to research, this can make a person more susceptible to allergic reactions in the skin. Triggers of skin reactions may include various substances, including dust mites, pollen, and food. The frequency of rashes in older adults is gradually rising as society ages. And the last condition that can worsen with age is anaphylaxis. Anaphylactic reactions can be potentially life-threatening. Older adults can be particularly vulnerable to severe anaphylaxis due to certain risk factors, such as having co-occurring health conditions. Still, anaphylaxis can affect people of all ages. Some symptoms of anaphylaxis include difficulty breathing, fast heart rate, swelling of the lips or face, and fainting. Triggers may include food, medication, and insect bites. As people age, they are less able to cope with anaphylaxis because of conditions that affect the heart and blood vessels, such as high blood pressure medications that would hinder the actions of the body to counter the anaphylaxis, and irregular heartbeats. Treating allergies. Treatment depends on the type of allergy, but does pose a greater challenge in older adults. First, diagnosing the allergy and differentiating it from other conditions may be difficult and delay treatment. Once a doctor diagnoses an allergy, co-occurring conditions and ongoing medications may limit treatment options. These factors can cause harmful effects on the allergy itself or lead to negative interactions with allergy medications. More research is necessary to determine optimal allergy treatment for older adults. The previously mentioned 2017 review suggests that regular exercise may reduce allergies. It improves the following, which can influence the body's response to an allergen. It improves immune function, heart and lung function, and muscle strength. If an individual experiences symptoms of anaphylaxis, they should call 911 for emergency treatment. Consulting a specialist. As treating older adults for allergies presents difficulties, if a person experiences symptoms, they should consult a specialist. This can include speaking with an allergist or a dermatologist. Someone's primary care doctor may direct them to a specialist with the needed expertise. Summary. Allergies getting worse with age is one of the difficulties that older adults may encounter. Older adults tend to have more chronic conditions and experience a decline in the functioning of several organs, both of which can heighten an allergic response. Aging can potentially worsen any allergy, including hypersensitivities to food medications, insect bites, and pollen. Treatment options are more limited in older adults than in those who are younger, as allergy medications may negatively interact with ongoing medications. Such treatment may also have an adverse effect on existing chronic conditions. A person with allergies may wish to consult a specialist, but again, someone with symptoms of an anaphylactic reaction should immediately call 911. And that's the conclusion of the article about allergies that get worse as we age. Next article is entitled, When Medicaid Comes After the Family Home. Federal law requires states to seek reimbursement from the assets, usually homes, of people who died after receiving benefits for long-term care. This article was written by Paula Spann of the New York Times, dated March 16, 2024. The letter came from the State Department of Human Services in July 2021. It expressed condolences for the loss of the recipient's mother, who had died a few weeks earlier, age 88. Then it explains that the deceased had incurred a Medicaid debt of more than $77,000 and provided instructions on how to repay the money. "I was stunned," said the woman's 62-year-old daughter. At first, she thought the letter might be some sort of a scam. It wasn't. She asked not to be identified because the case is unresolved and she doesn't want to jeopardize her chances of getting the bill reduced. The New York Times has reviewed documentation substantiating her account. The daughter moved into the family's Midwestern home years earlier, when her widowed mother, who had vascular dementia, began to need assistance. Her mother was well insured, with Medicare, a private supplement Medigap policy, and long-term care insurance. The only reason she enrolled in Medicaid was that she had signed up for a state program that allowed her daughter to receive modest payments for caregiving. But that triggered additional monthly charges through a Medicaid-managed care organization, and now the state wants the money back. The practice dates to 1993, when Congress mandated that when Medicaid beneficiaries over age 55 have used long-term services such as nursing homes or home care, states must try to recover those expenses from the beneficiaries' estates after their deaths. Medicaid requires beneficiaries to spend down almost all of their assets in order to qualify for benefits, explained Eric Carlson, a directing attorney at Justice in Aging. Most states allow those eligible for Medicaid to retain assets worth only $2,000. But if a beneficiary owns a home, it can be exempt. Still, if Medicaid has paid for long-term care insurance care, and there's money to be had after death, state agencies will come for the assets. If there's going to be tens of thousands of dollars available for recovery, in most cases, it's the house, Mr. Carlson said. Surviving family members may have to sell the house to repay Medicaid, as the Midwestern daughter may be forced to do, or the state may seize the property. Medicaid is the only public benefit program from the United States of America that requires states to seek to get money back. This month, Representative Jan Schakowsky, Democrat of Illinois, introduced a bill called the Stop Unfair Medicaid Recoveries Act to end this practice. Her staff has calculated that 17,000 families in Illinois alone have lost homes to Medicaid recovery since 2021. Comparable national figures aren't available, but an independent agency that advises the federal government and the states on Medicaid issues reported in 2021 that states collected $733 million through estate recovery in fiscal year 2019. That amounts to only about 0.5% of Medicaid's long-term care expenditures, according to the agency MACPAC, the Medicaid and CHIP Payment and Access Commission. Only 8 states collected more than 1% of expenditures. This is a really harmful and cruel program, Ms. Schakowsky said, and it's not working. The cost of actually trying to get the money could exceed any money that would be returned. When Congress established the mandate, proponents argued that estate recovery would save money and promote fairness, since some higher-income seniors hired lawyers to help shield their assets so that Medicaid would pay their nursing home bills. But, for the most part, the states pursue claims against low-income families, many of them Black and Hispanic. Critics argue that the policy perpetuates poverty. The average wealth of a deceased Medicaid recipient over age 65 is less than $45,000, the MACPAC report noted, and the average home equity is $27,364. For a lot of these people, the home is a product of a lifetime's worth of working and scrimping, Mr. Carlson said. It could be a foundation for their children and grandchildren. That's pulled away from the family under these claims. It imposes recovery against the families and communities least able to pay for it. A surviving spouse or minor or disabled child can continue to live in the house after a Medicaid beneficiary dies, but when the survivors die or after a child turns 21, estate recovery can proceed. Every state offers hardship waivers that reduce claims, but the process tends to be difficult or futile, Mr. Carlson said. Depending on the state, the request is almost always unsuccessful. I don't think estate recovery was a policy created primarily to impact low-income families, but that's the impact it's having, said Natalie Keene, another directing attorney at the organization Justice in Aging. Estate recovery can also affect middle-class families, however. Many turn to Medicaid because, given the cost of nursing homes, the median price last year was $8,669 a month. In those circumstances, your savings can disappear in a hurry, Mr. Carlson said. Brian Snell, an elder law attorney in Marblehead, Massachusetts, represents a family whose 93-year-old mother, who had dementia, died in 2022 in her condo in North Andover. Her daughter had cut back on her hours as a beautician to care for her at home, wanting to keep her out of a nursing home because that was her mother's wish, Mr. Snell said. When the mother qualified for MassHealth, the state's Medicaid program, it enrolled her in a state home care program that provided home health aides, though only sporadically because the pandemic made workers and agencies hesitant to enter homes. After her death, MassHealth sought to recover $292,000 for the cost of home care and the program premiums. Because two of her children were low income, including the caregiving daughter, a state waiver would allow those two to receive $50,000 each from the sale of the mother's condo. But more than half of the $335,000 sale price will go to the state and federal governments. The prospect of such clawbacks prevents some low-income older adults from receiving necessary care, even if they're eligible. It's not uncommon for people to simply decline to apply for Medicaid services once they learn about the recovery program, said Matthew Portwood, an intake supervisor at the Atlanta Regional Commission, which serves as the local agency on aging. Mr. Portwood concluded, our counselors encounter this almost daily. Some states are working to reduce the financial hit on low-income families. Massachusetts, Georgia, South Carolina, and Illinois, for instance, will not pursue recovery against the state's valued below $25,000. Some states now provide applicants with a fuller explanation of the consequences of signing up. California allows hardship waivers for a homestead of modest value, as defined as the market value of up to half the original price of the homes in the county. MACPAC recommended amending federal law to allow states to make recovery optional. Representative Schakowsky's bill goes beyond that to prohibit Medicaid estate recovery altogether. It's just a terrible idea, she said. Her bill faces an uphill battle in the Republican-controlled House. All its 13 co-sponsors to date are Democrats, and it went nowhere when she introduced it last session. But the Congresswoman remains optimistic. People in red states need long-term care, too. Back in the Midwest, the daughter, who was billed $77,000, still hopes to remain in the two-story house where she grew up, where her mother lived for more than 60 years, and where there's a memory in every corner. Now she is looking for a lawyer. I have to fight this, she said. And that's the conclusion of the story about Medicaid recovery, including the family home. Soaring over hills or playing with puppies, study finds seniors enjoy virtual reality. A new study finds that seniors like virtual reality. Stanford University surveyed residents of 17 senior communities in the United States and found virtual reality improved both their emotions and their interactions with staff. This is an article by Terry Spencer of the Associated Press, dated February 19, 2024. Retired Army Colonel Farrell Patrick taught computer science at West Point during the 1970s and then at two private universities through the 1990s, so he wasn't surprised by the progress technology has made over the decades. But when the 91-year-old got his first virtual reality experience recently, he was stunned. Sitting in a conference room at John Knox Village, a suburban Fort Lauderdale, Florida retirement community, Patrick sat up straight as his eyes and ears experienced what it would be like to be a Navy fighter jet flying off the Florida coast. "Oh my God, that's beautiful," he blurted before the VR program brought the jet in for a landing on top of an aircraft carrier. John Knox Village is one of 17 senior communities around the country that participated in a recently published Stanford University study that found that large majorities of 245 participants between the ages of 65 and 103 years old enjoyed virtual reality, improving both their emotions and their interactions with staff. The study is part of a larger effort to adapt virtual reality so it can be beneficial to seniors' health and emotional well-being and help lessen the impact dementia has had on some. During the testing, seniors picked from 7-minute virtual reality experiences such as parachuting, riding in a tank, watching stage performances, playing with puppies and kittens, or visiting places like Paris or Egypt. The participants wore headsets that gave them 360-degree views and sounds, making it seem like they had all but dropped into the actual experience. It brought back memories of my travels and brought back memories of my experience growing up on a farm, said Terry Colley, a former public relations director at the Canadian Embassy in Washington, D.C., of his 2022 experience. Colley, who is 76, liked swiveling in a chair to get a panoramic view. That was kind of amazing. Ann Selby, a 79-year-old retired counselor and artist, found virtual reality stimulated virtually every part of my brain, all of the senses. I particularly enjoyed the ones dealing with pets because I have a cat and I've had pets most of my life, she said. Stanford's peer-reviewed study, working with the company Mind Immersive, found that almost 80% of seniors reported having a more positive attitude after their virtual reality session, and almost 60% said they felt less isolated socially. The enjoyment lessened somewhat for older respondents whose sight and hearing had deteriorated. Those who found virtual reality less enjoyable were also more likely to dislike technology in general. In addition, almost 75% of caregivers said residents' moods improved after using virtual reality. More than 80% of residents and almost 95% of caregivers said talking about their virtual reality experience enhanced their relationship with each other. For the majority of our respondents, it was their first time using virtual reality. They really enjoyed it. They were likely to recommend it to others, and they look forward to doing it again, said Ryan Moore, a Stanford doctoral candidate who helped lead the research. We are proving virtual reality to be a tool that really does help with the well-being of our elders, said Chris Brickler, Mind's CEO and co-founder. The Texas-based company is one of a handful that specializes in virtual reality for seniors. It is far different than a two-dimensional television or an iPad. Separate from the study, John Knox Village uses virtual reality in its unit that houses seniors who have Alzheimer's disease and other dementia. It helps spur memories that lead to conversations with caregivers. It is like they come back to life when they tell their story, said Hannah Salem, the facility's meaningful life coordinator. She said that with others who don't talk much, they then perk up when given a virtual reality experience that puts them in nature. They'll start laughing and saying, "Oh, I'm going to catch the butterflies," Salem said. Catching butterflies is also part of a game Mind developed that helps seniors enhance their mobility, and flexibility as they stand and reach for objects. It's more fun for these seniors to come in and catch butterflies and work on shoulder rehab than it is for them to go pick up a weight, Brickler said. Brickler said his company's systems will soon attach to Google Earth, so seniors can virtually visit neighborhoods where they lived, schools they attended, and places they have visited, sparking further conversations with caregivers. Such virtual visits can bring back a tremendous amount of joy, a tremendous amount of memories, and when the therapist or the other caregiver can work with that older adult and talk through things that they see, we'll definitely see that it provides an uplift, Brickler said. The company has worked on the biggest complaints seniors in the study had about virtual reality. The headsets were too heavy, the heat they generated made their foreheads sweat, and sometimes the experience created nausea, he said. The new headsets weigh about 6 ounces instead of a pound. They have a built-in fan for cooling, and the videos aren't as jumpy. The findings that seniors in their 80s and 90s enjoy virtual reality less than those in their 70s might lead to changes for them, such as requiring less neck rotation to see all the scenery and making the visuals bigger, Moore said. Farrell, the retired Army computer expert, said he hopes to live to 100 because he believes the next 5 years will see momentous change in virtual reality. Still a technology enthusiast, he believes the cost of systems will drop dramatically and become part of everyday living, even for seniors. And that's the conclusion of our story about virtual reality and senior adults. And that's all the time we have for this week's reading of 50 Plus. I'm Paula Dessel for the Virginia Voice. This program airs weekly at 1:30 p.m. on Saturdays and 10:30 a.m. on Sundays. It's also available anytime, on demand, at www.virginiavoice.org. Thanks for listening.